I'm Mark Strassman. This is Biz Tech News, and we're about to talk to Donald A. Janke, the president of Internet Ventures Incorporated in Redondo Beach, California. Welcome to Biz Tech News.
Thank you.
You've just initiated a petition to the Federal Communications Commission regarding the provision of Internet services over cable systems, and we're going to talk to you about it. But before we do, why don't you tell our listeners what exactly is broadband and why is it so important?
Broadband relates to, obviously, the Internet, and it is the difference between what we use today, which you could characterize as a garden hose connection to the Internet, to replace it with broadband, which is like a fire hose connection to the Internet. With a larger pipe to the Internet, you're able to do more advanced content such as streaming media, which means watching TV on your PC.
Let's talk specifically about Internet Ventures, Inc. When and how is it formed, and what is its mission?
We go back to middle of 95. Our philosophy was that there were many large Internet companies that covered the nation, but we wanted to focus on specific communities. And we are a collection of ISPs presently in the western states that focus on local presence in specific communities. So in those communities, we are an ISP that will do anything from bring your computer in and put it down on our counter and we'll help you, to training you on how to use the Internet, to providing local connection services for the Internet.
So what's distinctive about its structure is that it's sort of an association of local providers rather than a national system that has local branches.
Yeah, you might want to characterize it more as a consolidation of local Internet service providers. Part of Internet Ventures' goal was to go out and offer ISP owners to join us, and in turn we would take our stock and exchange it for the stock in the company that they started.
What was your role, particularly, in the founding of the company, and what role do you play now?
Well, I'm feeling pretty ancient these days. My background is 8 years in the cable industry in the 80s. This is my 11th year in the online Internet business. My role in this one was, having just left Prodigy, I was looking for had heard about this thing called the Internet, and saw that the Internet was probably going to overrun online services. So got together with a few other folks, and we founded the company on the premise of bringing other ISPs and small markets together.
So how far along in the business plan are you now?
We're as far along as we have the money that we've raised. Our business plan was slightly different. The CFO, myself, we've pretty much done nothing but startup companies most of our career lives. And we've usually done it in structures or environments where there was venture capital money or very large companies with seed money. And we chose a route this time of what you might refer to as retail placement, which means that we raised money in a non-traditional fashion through selling our equity to smaller investors. So at this point, we have some 1,200 shareholders in the company, with an average investment of probably around $6,000.
But the company isn't publicly traded.
Not at this time.
How good a job would you say that the regional Bell companies and the cable companies, hereinafter collectively known as the incumbent providers, done in bringing broadband Internet access to the general population?
Well, this might be putting my toe in the water or my foot in my mouth, which I'm not sure which one this is going to be, but I think they've done very well at making their arguments to allow their rates to increase on the promise of delivering broadband. To date, they have very spotty implementation.
And where do the plans of Internet Ventures, Inc. Fit in with that situation?
Our plan's pretty simple, actually. It's let the Internet fulfill the promise of cable. Deliver on that 500-channel promise that we've heard about. Deliver on that wealth of information sources that have been promised from cable since the early 80s.
We're going to talk about the politics and the business aspects of all this, but let's focus just a little bit on the technology. The promise of 500 channels that John Malone made most famously several years ago, but that the cable industry has been making for a long time. How does what the Internet offer differ from what the cable companies have been talking about?
The Internet offers free and unfettered competition. the evolution of the internet has happened so rapidly, in my opinion, because of that highly competitive environment where people need to innovate or companies need to innovate to stand out from the crowd. You might have to characterize cable as a de facto monopoly. I'm accusing myself because I was in cable in the 80s. But you might, maybe it's a little bit like the guy who's working on his third million because he gave up on the first two. In the mid-80s, we called it what you want when you want it. In the early 90s, we called it the full-service network. And now it's called cable internet. And can we trust cable to implement a broadband strategy? What we're wanting to do is to assure that cable implements a broadband strategy, again, through the ability to use competition as the means to allow the local ISPs, these 5,000 local ISPs in this country, to implement broadband over cable.
Now, the problem is that the cable companies are saying that they and they alone are entitled to provide internet service over their cables. Is that right?
I was having an interesting argument with a cable operator or a senior person from a cable operator in Chicago, and that was the argument that he was using. He was saying, hey, we built it, and we shouldn't have to share it. And I said, you know, that's probably what the landowner said when the city came to him and said, we're going to allow a cable company to put cables in the ground behind your house on your property. And the property owner said, hey, I bought it, and I shouldn't have to share it. But the city overrode that, just as the city overrides cable to say, no, wait a minute, you have a public interest right that must be fulfilled, which is to allow competition across your wire.
The fact being that right now the only broadband conduit into most residences is the cable system.
Correct. You'd almost characterize to say 99% of the implementations of cable internet are done with companies that are owned or substantially owned.
Now, the argument is further made by the cable companies that certain equipment needs to be positioned at their head ends, and that's complicated and expensive and annoying and so on. What about that argument?
Well, we have a four-letter word response for that: bunk.
Would you elaborate?
Cable's argument is that they have to make billions of investment in infrastructure in order to provide internet. Broadband internet. That's not true. To provide a more elegant solution for broadband internet, yes, it would be true that they have to invest billions, but they don't in order to implement broadband internet today. The reason for that is that by utilizing existing infrastructure of the telephone line as your upstream connection and the cable line as your downstream connection, the middle guy, the ISP, is using the best of the technology that's there to deliver what will satisfy most internet consumers.
And the reason that's even elegant, but certainly efficient, is that most internet users, even ones who would be watching internet television, all they have to send upstream is their request for the channel. But they have to receive downstream the billions of bits that constitute the video for the television. So that what you're saying is essentially the same way that satellite providers of services allow people to order over the telephone and receive downstream from orbit the signals. Cable essentially can work in the same way, and the system can provide the upstream capability through the telephone, which already exists, and downstream through the cable.
Very true. I mean, there are many current analogies that we're just simply evolving to utilize cable. For example, only recently in the past couple of years has there been the KFlex or 56K, now called V90, service. That is what's called an asymmetrical service. The upstream, albeit over phone, is slower than the downstream, which does come over phone at a faster speed. So it is this asymmetrical approach that we continue to promote. Used also by the satellite industry, for example, DirectPC. It is a slow telephone line connection upstream, 100 kilobits per second downstream from the satellite.
What path did you take? What steps did you take to try to persuade or cajole or pay for access to cable systems for your service?
Well, where we started on this path, and I should clarify one thing maybe in advance of that answer. We actually started on this path of cable internet back in mid-96. And we do have four carriage agreements with cable operators, much like an agreement you'd have with an HBO if you were a cable operator. We always focus, though, on the markets that we operate in as a local ISP, and we only achieved 4 out of 19. In those other markets, the other 15 markets, we would also like to do broadband internet, but we have been restricted or precluded by being unable to convince the cable operator to implement in those markets.
How's it working out technically and from a business point of view in the markets where you have been able to connect?
It's worked out very well. We have approximately 1,700 customers over cable internet out of our some 30,000 customers that are in total. The interesting piece of this that surprised us, we had thought that only the higher usage customers would convert over to cable internet. What we found surprised us that some 20% of the customers that sign up for our brand called PerkyNet were customers that had never paid for an internet connection before. And it seems that from our early research that the higher speed or the elimination of the worldwide wait is a compelling enough argument to draw a whole new class of internet customers.
So in fact, the people who haven't been using the internet at all have in a sense been waiting for television because they don't want to chat or they don't want to surf. They want to watch more programs.
More rich media content.
What does it cost them over and above whatever they would pay? How is it? Is it competitive with other services? What's the comparative cost for this?
The price that we've been using now for almost a year is $29.95 a month, where we confirm a 256K downstream, although people get much faster than that, but we make sure that they get that. And that includes the rental of the modem. So it's a total package, $30 a month, internet service with over broadband.
And how complicated is it for the end user? You just said these are people who are new users, so it couldn't be that complicated. How do they connect it to the cable?
Yeah, the way it's is we do send somebody out to the house. Inside the PC, there either exists or is installed an Ethernet card. External to the PC is a cable modem, and there are three connections on the cable modem. One, it acts much like a router would. One connection is obviously an Ethernet connection to the PC. Another connection is the coaxial cable that's been split at the home and moved over to the PC. And on that, to clarify, you can watch your TV while you're using your cable modem. It's simply a splitting of the signal. And then the third connection is to the phone line, which is for the upstream.
And what essentially results is a high-speed connection into the PC or into the television, if you've got web TV or something like that? In other words, can you broadcast, can you display the signals from the internet on the television?
At this point, we're not aware of any set-top boxes like a web TV box that has an Ethernet connection. So at the moment, cable modems are pretty much precluded to just the connection to the PC.
Do the people have to install an Ethernet compliant connection into their PC?
We include that. With the installation, we provide the Ethernet card, do the installation, put the cable modem in, and from that point, it's basically the same software that you use today, and it's the same kind of point and click. You use the standard browsers like you do. Your launch button, as you might call it, simply makes the connection as you do today for dial-up.
So you then have essentially a one-channel connection to the internet, which is a multiplicitous source of sub-channels in a way. And so you're using one channel of the cable to lead out to the internet.
Correct. It's essentially channel 37 on one of our PerkyNet implementations, and that channel the cable modem understands, but it's a little bit more garbage to a television set to receive it.
How complicated would it be to build essentially an Ethernet set-top box that would allow you to forego or add on the television capability so that if there are a million old movies or a million new programs and you want to watch them on your HDTV screen, for example, so that how you'd be able to connect that and have some sort of appliance module that would let you not bother to do any of these other things but just do that?
I think that'll evolve. We'll make an assumption. Assume that the petition is favorably received at the FCC. This will allow 5,000 ISPs to implement broadband internet to the PC. With that massive growth of audience, I would speculate that a set-top would evolve fairly quickly.
All right, then I guess it's time to move over to the political side from the technical side. As a result of not getting any satisfaction from these other cable companies, what thinking did you go through before you decided to apply to the FCC for some sort of help?
Well, procedurally, what we first started with was back in December, sending out, per the regulations, a request to cable operators, including what's now known as AT&T BIS, or formerly TCI, Media One, Century Communications, a letter requesting sample rates for a channel, requesting a sample contract. And they were in compliance with that, and there are FCC regs that provide that. We did notice one interesting comment in virtually every letter. Which, tongue-in-cheek, I'm sure it was, but we noticed by your letterhead that you must be an Internet service provider. We want to make you aware that the rules for leasing a channel don't apply to you. And we obviously disagreed. So we went through a procedure of next moving to the cities, because they are the ones that actually provided the ordinance for the cable company to operate. Went to the city, several cases of Ventura, California, Spokane, Washington, and said, we're having a little trouble with your cable operator. And we need a little assistance to nudge them to comply with federal regulations. The cities did take a look at it, and they felt that, yeah, they would get involved to a point by supporting competition, but they felt that at some point there would need to be clarification from the FCC. So over a five-month period, we've gone through the processes of requesting the channel from cable, being denied by cable, going to the city saying, we'll support you, but we need some extra oomph from the FCC. And then the ultimate conclusion here was this week filing the petition for declaratory ruling with the FCC.
And what exactly are you asking for in that petition to the FCC, which, for people who don't know, is the Federal Communications Commission, which has the authority over cable to the extent that anyone has authority over cable, besides cities and the cable companies themselves?
Ask them a very simple question. Can the Internet grow up to be video? And if they say yes, then the video lease channel rules apply. And so, therefore, that would provide us the extra to say, FCC's agreed, dear cable operator, when will you sign the contract, because we want to implement.
In essence, you're asking to be declared a bona fide content provider over cable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might want to walk you through a couple of steps. I hope this is not I followed you so far, but if I could find my way back, I'd go. But essentially, the rules are Section 612 of the Communications Act 34 as amended. In Section 612, it spells out that there are rules that allow a non-affiliated company to lease a cable channel for commercial use. Commercial use is in turn specifically defined as video programming. Video programming in the rules is specifically defined as programming that's delivered by or programming that is comparable to a TV broadcast station.
Right.
Now, at the level of a TV broadcast station, what do? They deliver video. They deliver text. It's called closed captioning. They deliver audio. They deliver graphics. And they have what they call sub-channels that deliver things such as email. These are all things that exist today across a TV broadcast station beyond their core purpose of delivering video. Now, our argument is that essentially we are a video programmer. We've demonstrated that we deliver specifically, expressly, TV broadcast stations. If you look at our Perky.net portal, you'll see some 75 TV broadcast stations that we have aggregated to be delivered across this channel. And in addition to that, as ancillary services, we will deliver email and text and graphics of the Internet.
So in fact, you already are delivering bona fide, actual television station signals.
Correct. And I smile when I say this, but in talking with response to one cable operator, they were saying bunk, and I said, no, excuse me, how did cable start? Let's see, in the 50s, they started by taking a distant signal and retransmitting it over their cable wire. I said, well, that's exactly what we're doing. We're taking a distant signal from South Korea, from Vatican TV, and we are retransmitting it across our PerkyNet channel over your cable system.
So, in fact, what we have here really is the juxtaposition in the intersection of the technical maturing of the Internet as a video delivery system and the need to convince the political, economic, business, legal system that it is such a thing.
Very true. The internet today delivers pocket-sized TV. And our question to the FCC was, will you let the internet grow up to be video? It means that with access to the broadband pipe, we can take pocket TV and make it full screen near VCR quality.
And in fact, with all of the work going on in wireless and handheld technologies, as well as land-based internet technologies, video, audio and video is the coming thing, is the happening thing, is what's the edge of what's developing. And absent the approval of the FCC here and the acceptance of your proposal by the cable companies, cable television would be the only place where there wouldn't be this video happening, essentially.
Their argument is, we already do that. Why do you need to do that another way?
Are there? I don't want to put words or thoughts in their mouth, but is it your impression that they don't understand the technology or they don't want the competition?
Both. Some of my experience would say it's a bit like Hollywood meets Silicon Valley. There are two clear cultures there. Second part of it is that looking at the history of cable, you do find many instances of perhaps anti-competitive behavior. That was why the rules were written in the first place. The least access rules were written because there was a recognition that a cable company would favor the program services that they have an ownership in, and that cable program or video programming services that were not partially owned by cable would not be carried. So in order to provide that diversity of video programming, the Congress and FCC stepped in to say, you will have to lease a certain number of your channels to non-affiliated companies.
And in fact, the advantage is by leasing one channel to you, they're leasing thousands of channels, essentially, because there's so much diversity possible to be downloaded over the one internet channel.
Exactly. It essentially, again, is let the internet fulfill the promise of cable, the 500-channel universe.
There are some people, I guess, principally, I guess, cable companies, that argue that the FCC doesn't have the authority to regulate it as much as the FCC might like. Is a declaratory judgment from FCC in accord with your petition going to be enough to get you what you want?
Yes. The reason for that is that the least access rules are very predictable and very stable. The first formation of those rules was back in 1984. They were refined in 1992, further refined in the Telecom Act of 96, and specific policies related to implementation were done in February of 1997. So it has a very long history of precisely defining what it is. Assuming the FCC says, yes, the internet video is video programming, then therefore those rules are very clear.
What happens if 2, 3, 4, 10, or 100 ISPs decide they want to sign up for a cable company's channels?
Well, there's an upward limit. Take a particular market, for example, in Spokane, Washington. Based on the size of the cable system and the number of channels that they have implemented, their number that they have provided us is 13 channels are available for leased access. That would mean you could have 13 competing ISPs competing for broadband internet over that TCI system in Spokane.
So up to 13 company ISPs could sign up? And
Correct. It would vary from market to market, but in that particular case, it is a general rule of thumb, it's between 10 and 15% of the active channels have for years been required to be set aside for leased access.
And they haven't been. They've run out of people who do traditional video programming that haven't leased them all yet.
Very true. Of the 13 available channels in Spokane available for leased access, there are 13 available.
Okay. What's the timetable for the FCC to respond and for things to proceed?
Well, I can't really predict on our particular petition. I can only do the rule of thumb of traditionally, the process for a declaratory ruling is a fast track process. If it were to follow the traditional means, it would be a writing up by the Cable Services Bureau of the petition in a language that adds more to it. They present it to the commission. The commission says, yep, that's fine. Put it on public notice. The public notice sits there for 30 to 60 days. So the entire process, if it were traditional, would be end of summer. This may not be a traditional issue, though.
Does Congress have any say-so in this?
Yeah. They have already had their say back in 84 92, 96, when they were the ones that provided the infrastructure or the regulation, which is the FCC's job to enforce that policy.
People listening to this who think it would be a good idea to be able to get high-speed internet capability over their cable system, where can they go? What can they do? How can they organize themselves to in support of what you're doing?
Okay, at this point, I would suggest the first item is to you might want to provide yourself with a little more education, which so that you're clear on the issue. I mean, the bottom line issue is demand a choice. You know, the cable operator is going to tell you, it tells you today, you have one choice for cable internet, and that's the one that we own at the price that we describe on the time frame that we will allow. And goal as a consumer is to first demand a choice. To get into the depth of the issue, you can visit a website, www.ivn.net/strat/access.html. And if that's a lot of letters, ivn.net will lead you by just by going there, click on the button that says broadband choice.
Good, thanks. Doctrine, according to which you're making your case, is called the must-carry doctrine. Could you just elaborate a little bit on what that is and how you came to see that it needs to be carried over to the internet?
Okay, two parts to that. The must-carry is you might say, is an easy way for somebody not heavily involved in the issue to understand it. Yes, the leased access rules require tell the cable operator they must carry this as a leased access channel. But to clarify a little bit, that was an easy explanation that I've seen used in a few of the print publications. Specifically or expressly to a cable operator and to the FCC, the rules relate to leased access or channels for commercial use, Section 612.
So it's really a must-lease doctrine.
Correct. Yeah, we found that that got picked up, but to clarify it really is the must-lease.
We're almost out of time. Maybe you could give us one more time the short and the long versions of the URL that people can go to get some more information about all this.
Go to www.ivn.net and click on the broadband choice button.
So what's your personal feeling about all this? Are you enjoying being on the cutting legal technical edge of all this?
Didn't expect to be here. This is... from, I have said this before. Okay, I'll be honest here. To a cable operator, I said, you know, some parents are good for their host. You know, we had expected this would be a friendly approach for the cable operator. We base that on the fact that in our observations, cable has slowed down on implementing cable internet for about a year now. And we felt this was a solution, especially for rural markets where virtually nothing has been done to move the broadband internet concept forward and benefit the cable operator who wasn't doing anything or making revenue from it in these smaller markets, move it into the cable environs. DSL is stuck. Cable could implement this immediately. 100% of cable plant in the country, every customer that wanted it in the country would have broadband internet available to them. So I didn't really expect that we would get into the don't darken our door syndrome, but I could see it start to come, especially as the Section 706, which is a report from the FCC to Congress, not really addressing the issue of ownership of broadband internet distribution, and the merger or lack of comment on the AT&T-TCI merger, it very much looked like we were headed towards a duopoly. And I'm not an inside the beltway guy. I hadn't been to DC for 15 years, and I've been there four times in the past 3 months. When I got there and started understanding this, I understood how much more critical this issue was than simply an internet venture's business strategy. And I just to put it into a nutshell, I have a deep concern on what I see, that we may be headed towards a duopoly for delivery of internet services. And that duopoly is either your telephone wire into the home or the cable wire into the home.
And there's another alternative. What you're talking about.
The alternative is allow the internet to continue to grow free and unfettered. The rules are existing. Let those 5,000 entrepreneurial ISPs across the country take the consumer to the next level of speed. Evolve them from V90 to cable internet.
And in fact, in terms of the product that would be viewed and consumed by the viewers, the possibilities here are enormous to, as I was talking earlier about an Ethernet set-top box using this system, to multiply into the thousands the channels that are available. And as the internet begins consuming and subsuming all other media and activities, the blocking of it by this duopoly is probably a lot less desirable than opening up the system now that the technology is enabling it for thousands of outlets, low cost, high cost, everybody in between, to produce the programming and to choose the programming. So you get millions of combinations rather than a lot fewer.
Yeah, cable is chosen to tell you which program services you can have. And the delivering of thousands of channels on a microcasting basis is very compelling. I was talking to a guy the other day, and it was a great example. He is a bottle cap collector. Now, that's a very esoteric type, but they have a bottle cap collector national show. And he was saying, geez, I would love to see that webcast. I mean, those very microcast interests. Beyond that, there are hundreds of TV stations around the world. We have a very diverse population in this country. If you look at what you can achieve over cable today, I was talking to a person the other day, there are at least two television channels delivered in Chinese. However, there are some 40 that could be easily delivered by grabbing them off a satellite and coding them and delivering over those 500 channels over cable. Now, if you have an interest in an ethnic group or news from your country, those channels are available, and they can be delivered over this mechanism.
And in fact, the narrowcasting dream of 20 or 30 years ago is in fact realized here, so that the bottle cap channel can be set up. And in fact, with cheaper and cheaper video production equipment, I mean, I'm doing this interview with about $500 worth of equipment, and it's the equivalent of a television studio's audio capability, essentially. The same capability is possible with video. This then means that each person almost can be their own television station.
There's no question about it. And since we started this, especially over the past few weeks, I've been getting emails from video programmers. For example, there's 64 cable program services that can't gain carriage on cable. I got one the other day. I'm mention a name. It's a salontv.com. This is a video stream website for people in the hairdressing industry, hairstyling industry. There are so many applications for this that are already there, but there's no means of distribution, and the internet provides that, and it takes broadband internet over cable to deliver it as a stream of video.
Well, and it's going to take the FCC to tell the cable companies to make it happen, and I wanted to thank you for your work in doing it, and urge people to visit your website and get more information and get involved, and then lean back and watch 5,000 channels of television again.
And you're absolutely right that it is the FCC that will need to tell cable. The one unique piece about this is an outside the beltway issue. It will take public interest and involvement to nudge the FCC to say, pay attention to this, we like this.
Well, fortunately, we have the internet at our disposal, and we can communicate with the FCC by the internet and tell them in text and audio and video that we think it's a good idea.
Correct.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.